Okay, good evening. So basically what I decided, we decided, all of us decided something along those lines, is that this summer's project will be to try to understand the Vilna Gaon. So last week we spoke about whether or not the Vilna Gaon was modern Orthodox. That was our topic. And we had two basic points that we used to define modern Orthodoxy, which, based on Professor Chaim Waxman, we said that modern Orthodoxy involves a certain positive attitude toward human initiative in the establishment of the State of Israel. And we also explained that modern Orthodoxy involves an openness to secular studies in general. Those are the two defining attributes of modern Orthodoxy. So the question of the Vilna Gaon and his, whether or not his identity was modern Orthodox, is what we spoke about last week. And we spent a lot of time focusing on the science aspect of the Gra, but we didn't focus that much on the Israel aspect. So tonight, what I'd like to do for like 3 minutes, Mamish Bekitzer, very quickly, is just review or return to last week's topic and make two comments, one regarding science, one regarding Israel, and then we'll talk about the big elephant in the room called Hasidim. Hasidim, I didn't mean the Hasidim big elephants, but we have to be very careful, but you understand what we're trying to do. Got it?
Would he similar in some ways to Rabbi Cook?
That's a very broad question that I don't know if I'm prepared to answer. Okay, so now, in terms of the Gra's attitude towards science, so I have a chiddush, which I have not seen anywhere else besides in my own mind, and I'll show it to you. It's the bottom source over here. Remember, question, did the Gaon value science or not? And the question that we spoke about is, how seriously do we take Reb Baruch HaShklov's statement that to the extent that Reb Baruch HaShklov, quoting the Gra, that to the extent that I'm deficient in science, I'm deficient in Torah 100-fold. That was what we spoke about last week. It seems to me that the Gaon actually believed that not only is science important, but science is a halachic source. Ready? And I have a proof to that. Look at the bottom source over here, a Bir HaGra, bottom source on the first page. Okay, there is a discussion in Hilchos Mikvaos. There is something called a mikvah, which is stagnant water, and there's something called a ma'ayan, which is flowing, right, water, like a spring, right? Pasuk in Parashas Shmini, ach, ma'ayan uvar, mikveh ma'ayan yatahar, right? So a ma'ayan is metaher, and a mikvah is metaher. Ma'ayan is metaher v'zoichlin. A spring is metaher, even though the water is flowing. A mikvah is only metaher be'eshboren. A mikvah requires stagnant water. A mikvah requires arba'im sa'ah. You have to have a measurement of 40 sa'ah, whatever that measurement is. A ma'ayan, what? Does a ma'ayan require arba'im sa'ah or not? So that's a big machlokes harishonim. Huge machlokes harishonim, whether ma'ayan requires arba'im sa'ah. The Gra takes a stand. The Gra takes a stand on this issue. And the Gra says, he quotes a Tosis, that Tosis proves from a Gemara in Chagiga that Mayim is Chochuli Mechalchala, that the water underground kind of moves from place to place. And says the Gra that even though many Rishonim prove from that Gemara, he thinks that the proof from that Gemara is not absolute. He rejects that proof. And then he writes, and I underline this, two lines on the bottom, V'kosu b'sifrei hateva. What does that mean? Science books. Now, this is an amazing thing, Rabbi Osai, no? The Gra is telling me that sifrei hateva is a source in halacha, in Bir HaGron, you're there, Reish Aleph. No? Look at that. Right, many times you have water that is in the ground, and they found fish in it. How did the fish get there? Elamai, there's a connection underground with all the other stuff. The old kasru that they left fish in them, and they made simanim on the fish, betavos kesef, and they found those same fish in the rivers. Meaning, right, that there's some connection between the boros of Mayim and the rivers, and he's quoting this from Sifrei HaTeva, That means, ladies and gentlemen, that the Gra is telling us that Sifrei HaTeva can be used as a halachic source. I find that really interesting. That's much more modern than I would be. I'd be like fired, certainly in YU, maybe not in Mount Sinai, but certainly be fired in YU for using Sifrei HaTeva as a halachic source, right?
Really?
I don't know. I'm just joking. But probably.
Okay.
Huh? But so that, I think, that is the first point I wanted to make. The second point I wanted to make is we spoke last week about the Gra and his attempted aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. It is unclear when this happened. Everyone quotes that the Gra tried to move to the land of Israel. In the book that we'll be discussing at length in a few minutes, it's a book called Hagaon by a Dov Eliach. He dates the Gra's aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, or attempted aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, to the years 1760-1561. That is, as we'll see, earlier than the whole Hasidus issue erupted. But that is how Dov Eliach assumes. Now, question as to why the Gra wanted to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael and why he ultimately didn't make Aliyah is the big issue. Last week we presented a historian, Ari Morgenstern's thesis that the Gra was trying to bring Mashiach. And that's why we said that this is connected to like religious Zionism, no? If you believe in religious Zionism, that means that you believe that you can hasten the Messiah by settling the land, and the Gra was trying to do that, very religious Zionist idea. The source of that real religious Zionist idea is actually a book, Kol HaTor. I give you an excerpt from the Kol HaTor, the way it's called by Reb Moshe Sternbach. Basically, the Kol HaTor is written by Reb Hillel of Shklov. The Kol HaTor is an interesting book. It's Gra Mashiach talk. In the Kol HaTor, you see a few lines about how studying secular studies will help bring Mashiach. Right? You also see some lines in the Kol HaTor about how if you settle the land of Israel, that will hasten Mashiach. So Kol HaTor is the major source. Now, problem with Kol HaTor is like this. Kol HaTor is written by Rabbi Hillel of Shklov. Who the heck was Rabbi Hillel of Shklov? He's not, well, he's from Shklov. That's one issue. Shklov, we pointed out last week, we set up from David Fishman, is a Maskilic type of town. Right? The people are much more open than they are in the rest of Eastern Europe. So that's one issue. That's Shklov. Issue two is Reb Hillel Shklov might not be a student of the Gra. He's not listening to any of the official assistants of Gra. Issue number three is that this book, Kol HaTor, was not published until the year 1940 or something. Now that's a long time after Elijah Kramer Vilna died. Right, because he died in 1797. So between I wasn't a math major, but I realized that there's a chunk of time between 1797 and 1940. Now they say that it's an official manuscript. The Pashtus I thought is that the Kol HaTor is a forgery. I spoke to Schneier Lyman once in the library. He said, of course, Kol HaTor is a forgery. Now, there is a whole literature about the Kol HaTor, whether it's a forgery or not. Aaron Shriver, Zichrono Levracha, he was a friend of my father, he's a great guy. So Aaron Shriver wrote some articles in the BDD journal, B'chod Rachecha Da'ehil, which is the Bar Ilan Torah Umada journal, where he argued that the Kol HaTor has to be authentic, because he says, I spoke to a bunch of Mekubalim in Yerushalayim, and they told me that the ideas in the Kol HaTor authentically represent the ideas of the Gra. Now, the problem, of course, is that if these Mekubalim in Yerushalayim know enough about the ideas of the Gra, that they could tell me what's authentic, so some forger who knows a lot about the ideas of the Gra could also do an authentic forgery. So it's really very difficult. Reb Moshe Sternbach, in a tshuva, which I excerpt part of, tries to argue that the Kol HaTor is an absolute fraud, forgery, throw it out, nothing to talk about. Yeah, Chanuch. What?
Do those
Mekubalim study science? So there are certain Mekubalim who are open to the study of science. It's a much longer, or many Mekubalim feel that like we could barely understand Kabbalah, how can we understand science? But, okay, there you have it. Now, what's interesting about this entire shtickle Torah, about the Gra and Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and whether he's trying to hasten Mashiach, is it seems to go against the major source of the Gra's Aliyah. Now, there is a book called Aliyos Eliyahu. Actually, we had a copy in the Beis Medrash, but I stole it and I brought it home to help prepare for the Shiurim. I hope you'll all forgive me. So the Aliyos Eliyahu was written by Rev Yoshua Ber Levin. It was published in 1856. Basically, it is a hagiography of the Gra. It tells you all these amazing stories. When the Gra was 8 years old, he was mechadish this. When he's 11, he's mechadish that. All back and forth. All really exciting stuff about the Gra. That's all in the book Aliyos Eliyahu. Really important book. Very interesting work. That is what it has. Now, in the Aliyos Eliyahu, I give you the source. I typed it out myself, so there's actually one or two typos in the way I typed it. I'll see if you can catch them. But the fact is that in the Aliyos Eliyahu, the question as to why the Gra tried to make Aliyah is brought up. And he says as follows, V'hinei, ohev mitzos kamohu lo yisba mitzos. Someone who loves doing mitzos like the Gra is never satisfied with doing mitzos, and therefore he had the idea to go to Eretz HaKedosha, to go to Eretz Yisrael, and he went through Freisen. Freisen is Prussia and Hungary, and when he came to Königsberg, he sent a letter to his family. That is a famous letter that the Gra wrote, which is the only place that you see a human side of Elijah Kramer. The Gra seems like a superhuman machine, no? The one time that the Gra like shows a shtickle emotion, besides his fight with Chassid, that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, is, right, when he's on his way to Eretz Yisrael, he writes a letter to his family, and he tells his wife, by the way, I'm going, don't be upset, realize that I'm making Aliyah, and it's such an important mitzvah, and you should study Musar with the girls, and make sure that the boys daven, and like very, very nice, like you get an impression that he's almost a normal person.
Was he planning to bring them along?
So probably later on he was planning on bringing them along, although that's not made clear. But the only time you see something human about the Gra is in this letter, right? And right, that letter is full of Musar and Yerushalayim and the Hagashar. By the way, it's good to read. Now, interesting, that letter of the Gra, what year was that letter published? Oh my gosh. So there are different versions what year that letter was published. Either the letter was published in like 1823, or that letter of the Gra was published in 1560-something. There are different versions. No one that saw the 1560 version of it.
17,
I'm sorry, right? I made that mistake a few times already tonight. But no one ever saw that version. And there are different kisvei yad of it. I was looking around at home. I once got a good edition of the Igeres HaGra, like a scholarly version with like all of the different corrections. I was looking around at home tonight. I couldn't find it. So I know I have it. I actually remember when I bought it and who I bought it from, but I couldn't find it tonight. But you got to trust me that it's a complicated work in terms of identifying when it was written. It is assumed to be from the Gra, although not so pasha. But the fact is that the Gra went to Eretz Yisrael and then he stopped. Why did he stop? So the author of the Aliyos Eliyahu writes that he stopped because, and when he was older, the children asked him, how come you didn't go to Eretz Yisrael? And he didn't answer. Pam echad, acharov haftzaras devarim, heshev, ein li rishas min hashamayim. I had no heavenly permission to go. End of discussion. It's also quoted by the Gra's sons in the introduction to Shulchan Aruch, like in half a line, I tried to make Aliyah, and God said I couldn't do it. What does that mean? I have no idea. So there are different traditions how far he got. According to one tradition, he actually sat on the boat. And when he sat on the boat, a Tanakh fell out of his lap. And the Tanakh opened up to the Pasuk, Lo Tavar Es HaYardein Hazeh, Goral HaGra. That may be something we should discuss a different time. What is this very famous Goral of the Gra? But he sees the Pasuk, Lo Tavar Es HaYardein Hazeh, don't cross over the Jordan River. He says, okay, I can't go. Right? So we have no idea how far he got. We spoke last week. Ari Morgenstern points out that he didn't get to the Jordan River, for sure.
It's coming from the west.
So Morgenstern points out that he found evidence that the community in The Hague gave five whatever coin to a certain Eliyahu Achosid from Vilna to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, that's already interesting. The Hague is, 40 kilometers from Amsterdam? Why would he have gone that route? Right? The whole thing is a big mystery. But the fact is, to say that the Gro wanted to make Aliyah to bring Mashiach goes against the original, the earliest sources that we have. Because the Aliyos Eliyahu and others are saying he wanted to make Aliyah because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. And the Gro liked doing mitzvahs. End of discussion. No great eschatology over here. No great anything. That's the whole discussion. So this is just catch up from last week. Now let's talk about this week's topic. Okay? Gra and Chassidim. So they didn't like each other. Okay? That's about all we can say. Now, okay, so the story about the Gra and Chassidim is as follows. Everyone knows that there was this big machlokas between them. And as we'll see, here we could even look at Wikipedia. Okay? This is a primary source, right? Wikipedia, right, writes as follows. When Hasidic Judaism became influential in Vilna, the Vilna Gaon, joining the rabbis and heads of the Polish communities, took steps to check the Hasidic influence. Okay? In 1777, one of the first excommunications by the Mitnagdim was launched in Vilna against the Hasidim, while letters also addressed to large communities, etc., and Brody, and there was a Cherem. That's what he has. 1777. According to Wikipedia, that's when it begins. That is a mistake. That's a mistake. The earliest sources that we have are from excommunications in 1772. Not right now. There's a big difference. 1777 is after the American Revolution. 1772 is beforehand. Right, huge difference. But that I think has absolutely no influence on this conversation. Now, everyone knows that the Gra opposed Hasidim, but in recent years, this has not been discussed. Now, when I say recent years, I mean going way, way, way back. I mentioned a few minutes ago the earliest biography of the Gra, 1856, Aliyos Eliyahu. In Aliyos Eliyahu, do you see anything about the Gra's opposition to Hasidim? Nada zilch, that means nothing. Right? Nothing was there in 1856. In subsequent biographies of the Gra, for example, Rabbi Tzalo Landau wrote a book called Hagon HaChosid MiVilna. I think we spoke about it last week. Rabbi Tzalo Landau does not mention anything about the Gra's opposition to Hasidim. Now, why do you think nothing would be mentioned about the Gra's opposition to Hasidim in standard histories? What would you say to that question? What? Because Hasidim won, the Gra lost, maybe. Or wasn't on whose radar? We know the Gra was opposed. Okay, I have primary sources over here. This book by Mordechai Volinsky, we'll be quoting this extensively tonight, it's called Hasidim u'Misnagdim, is all the primary sources of the Machlokes between the Gra and the Hasidim. Starting in 1772, the Gra is signing letters. Right, very important stuff. This book is volume 1. This is 350 pages of letters. I have volume 2 at home with another 350 pages of letters. That's 700 pages of letters. That's a lot of chunk of letters, right? A lot of stuff. How come it's not mentioned by historians? So the answer, I think, has to do with something that my son pointed out to me this summer. This past summer, we were in Israel. And my wife and I decided, that we want to spend one Shabbos in Geula so that the kids would be exposed to, like, Jews who look different than Jews in Washington Heights, no? So we're spending Shabbos in Geula, and like I'm trying to explain to Baruch about like the different Hasidim and how they wear different socks and that represents where they're from and the briskers look different than the other groups, etc. And at some point he goes over to me and says, Abba, they all look the same, they're all Haredim, what's the difference? Right? Now, there is a certain truth to that, which is, you read any of the newspapers today, and Haredim is this big monolithic group. And yeah, to the insiders, they notice little differences, no? Based on how they wear the socks and where they wear their socks, etc.
It's like bird watching.
What?
It's like bird watching. It's like you can tell by the hats and the socks. But they're still all birds.
Correct. So, from the perspective of a kid who grew up in Washington Heights, all Haredim are the same. And you should know, it's not just from Baruch Schwartz's perspective. I think it's from the perspective of a lot of us as well. Right?
That's because you don't...
We're not so into it. We are like outsiders. By the way, most scholars are pretty similar to us in this sense. They're also outsiders to the system. And Haredim are Haredim. And honestly, in today's world, I could go to the Lakewood Yeshiva, and I'm going to see lots of gartels in Lakewood. No, Lakewood is officially a Litvish Yeshiva. A gartel is Hasidic garb, no? What's going on there? The answer is that there has been a homogenization of Orthodoxy. A certain person wrote about this in terms of a certain shul down the block, but there is a general homogenization that the local flavor has been lost, no? Now, this homogenization did not begin in 1950s Washington Heights. It began long beforehand. Basically, I contend that there were differences between Hasidim and Misnagdim, and there were bitter, bitter fights. But for some reason, those fights ended, and they decided that we are now going to be one big, happy Haredi entity. And therefore, the historians didn't want to ruffle too many feathers. So I'm not going to write about the dispute between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim, because ultimately, right, they're all the same from our perspective. Is that a fair point? Now, what made them all the same? So different historians have different notions. Some say what made them all the same is they had a common enemy called Haskalah. Once the Mendelssohn group, the open-minded, enlightened people are out there, oh, so now we are going to fight against them. We are going to join forces and fight, so therefore we can't fight against ourselves, right? That's what united them. The timing of this probably is not so pashut, but we could talk about this a little bit more. Yeah, Liv.
How can you say that's true? Because if you had Rabbi Hirsch, who was supposed to the Haskalah, he was not a Haskalah.
You're talking Western Europe. I'm talking Eastern Europe.
He's from Germany.
Germany is Western Europe.
Part of Germany was in Eastern Europe. It's on the border with
The self-identity of German, again, cultural identity is not the same as geographical identity. We could discuss that at a different time. But I think the reality is that no one is talking about the machlokas between the Gra and the Hasidim because they're all the same. Also because the Gra was wrong. Also because this portrays the Gra in some sort of bad light. Now, it could be that they made peace also because the government sort of forced them to do it. And we'll talk about that right now. There is a book that came out in 2002. The book has the catchy title, Hagaon. It's written by a Rabbi Dov Eliach. Rabbi Dov Eliach, it's three volumes. Now, if you want to buy these three volumes on Amazon, you have to put out a lot of money, because the book is not in print. The book is not in print because in 2002 it came out, and supposedly it had a haskama from Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, who's like Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky.
Yeah.
And then, shortly after, Charumim started coming against this book. And the Badatz Eid Haredis says the book called Hagaon is Usser. And if you go to the Sfarim blog, sfarim.blogspot.com, you will see a few exciting essays about the Charumim back and forth on this book called Hagaon. Now, the Charumim are about one part of the book. It is the part that I brought here tonight, pages 883 through 1031, which is the beginning of volume 3, which is all about Hasidim. And what this Rabbi Dov Eliach does is he says, you know what? The Hasidim were wrong in the 1770s, and they're wrong in the year 2000, and they're still wrong. And all the Gedolei Yisrael are against them. How come the Charumim stopped? How come they made peace? They made peace because the government didn't allow the Jewish community to put people in Cheirim anymore. But had they allowed the Jewish people to put people in Cheirim, they would have continued the Charumim. And how come Reb Chaim Volozhin, who founded the Volozhin Yeshiva in 1803, same year as the Louisiana Purchase, right? How come Reb Chaim Volozhin didn't make Charumim against Hasidim? Right? A Cheirim, by the way, means what? What's the gematria of the word Cheirim? 248. No? A person is supposed to have 248 limbs. Chayrim means that a curse should come and penetrate your 248 limbs and you should drop dead. Okay, it's scary, right? Really, really scary stuff, no? So now, how come Reb Chaim Volozhin didn't sign the Charamim? So says Rabbi Eliach, because when the Gro's alive, why would he sign? His Rebbe already signed. And after the Gro died, right? So Charamim couldn't be issued anymore. And Reb Chaim Volozhin held exactly the same as his Rebbe, the Gro, and Hasidim should all burn. That's basically the theme of this book. Now, you get the sense as to why people would put a book like this in the Charam. Now, there is a journal called Yeshurun. Yeshurun comes out from the west side of Manhattan. No, it's a really good journal. Rabbi Yaakov Perlow, you know him? He used to be a Rosh Hashiva in Breuer's down the street. No? Now he's known as the Novominska Rebbe Rosh Agudas Yisrael. Rabbi Yaakov Perlow writes a letter called Al Sefer HaGaon. Right? Basically, he says this book is a misnagdic tract. It is completely against Hasidim. They don't defend the Hasidim at all. Book is a terrible book, and don't have it. The amazing thing about the Journal of Yeshurun is they publish this letter from Yaakov Perlow, but if you look at the table of contents at the beginning of the book, it says that there is an essay called Al Sefer HaGaon, and it does not say who wrote the essay. But if you read the essay, you see that it was written by Rabbi Yaakov Perlow by the Novominska Rebbe, which is very interesting. So, what we have over here is a book that comes out in the year 2002 and is trying to bring back all of this machlokes that had not been discussed in any of the biographies of the Gra. The machlokes between the Gaon and Hasidim was not discussed. From the earliest biography in 1856 until 2002, it was not discussed. Right? And this guy brings it back. And now you see why the Hasidim again go all upset. And even, and they're saying, like, you're bringing out the trash, right? The trash from 200 years ago. You're bringing it out, and for what? For what earthly purpose? What's gained by it? So Rabbi Dov Eliach writes in his introduction, and this sounds really modern Orthodox, back to last week. Mm-hmm. He says the job is to understand people as they were, and not to sugarcoat and not to change. And if you ignore the Gra's attacks on Hasidim, you are doing a disservice to the image of the Gra. Because you are hiding this important aspect of the Gra's life. And he attacks Rabbi Bezalel Landau's book on the Gra for leaving it out. He writes that Rabbi Landau composed a chapter about the polemic against Hasidim, but then he was told by Rabbi Shlomo Brevda, who is supposed to be a great expert on the Gra, not to publish it, so he didn't publish it. He gives you this whole discussion. I think it's interesting, but it came out. Now, the other tinus that they have on Dov Eliach's book is that it's maskilic in nature. Now, what does maskilic in nature mean? It means two things. It means he's quoting scholarly sources, because there, everyone in universities who studied the Gra knew about this machlokes between the Gra and the Hasidim. They knew all the primary sources. In fact, this book they have here, called Hasidim and Misnagdim, by Mordechai Wilnesky, right? The book has been out for a while. All the sources have been available. So, you know, he's not digging up stuff that people in university didn't know, but people in, you know, homes in Geula and in Borough Park didn't know this stuff. They had forgotten it, right? And now it came back based on this book, Sefer HaGaon. And there are pictures that you could find in svarim.blogspot.com of various Hasidic Rebbes when they're burning the Chametz, burning the Sefer HaGaon. Yeah. It's out there.
Sure
you Google it, you'll see it, it's all there. Now, okay. So what's the story of the Gaon versus Hasidim? Why did they fight? When did the fight start? What was the fight about? And don't tell me that there was no fight and, like, they all got along, really, and there was a machlekes and they love each other. No, they didn't love each other. Right? It's like, I remember when I was taking Chaim Soloveitchik's class, so he made us read some of the machlekes in between the Raivan and the Bahamar. And they have lines like, Domani she'en lo moach b'kodkodol. It seems to me like this guy has no brain in his skull. Like, that does not mean that they're great tzaddikim and they love each other and just having a machloikas. That means they hate each other. No? There is a very, very harsh language in the charamim back and forth. Right? Now, it doesn't really... I shouldn't say charamim back and forth. The misnagdim were putting the chassidim in charam. The chassidim are doing what? They are fighting back by insulting misnagdik talmidei chachamim. That became a big issue. They are fighting back also in different ways that we'll talk about as we move on. Let's start to learn. First source, the earliest source of Gra versus Misnagdim, 1772. There is a kuntres that comes out called Zemir Aritzim V'Charvot Surim. That is the pruning of the arrogant and the flint knives. Right, that is the source that comes out. It's quoted in Walensky. It's quoted in Walensky, like pages 32 through 60. Six different letters. That's the story. Now, the Baal Shem Tov lived when? Baal Shem Tov died around 1750. Okay? Now, this kuntres is coming out in 1772. How come there's time in between? If you really feel the Hasidim are evil and smelly, by the way, smelly is also mentioned, right? If you really feel that they're bad, so why don't you attack them earlier? That's one question. So let's read the first attack, though. Acheinu Beis Yisrael. These are open letters written to communities of Shklov, of Pinsk, etc. Jews, halo yedatem chadashim mikarov ba'u, asher lo sa'arum avoteichem. You know that there are these new people who came on the scene that our fathers never would have imagined. Shenisrabu kat chashudim kechever ish gedudim, ma'e kolos kelapidim, ve'osim agudos la'atzmam, v'dateihem shonos mikol am beis Yisrael b'nuschei hatfila. V'gam shoagim b'tfila shmone esrei, v'omim shemachshavtam, misho tetes b'chol ha'olamos. And it goes on for like 10 other pages. Now, what does that mean? What are they attacking the Hasidim for? First source, 1772. This is the earliest source. What are they attacking Hasidim for? Nusach ha'tfila. Okay, now I think Nusach ha'tfila is a big deal, but I don't think that's the main point that they're arguing about.
Yelling during davening,
so they daven weirdly.
Seems implied that they're scatterbrained.
They're scatterbrained, their mind is all over the place. Now that probably means that like trying to think all these deep thoughts about God all the time, so attacking them for being like scatterbrained is a nice term, or much nicer than the term I would use, but...
Airheads.
Airheads, okay, thinking high thoughts spaced out.
Yeah.
They are separatists. They are making their own groups. Right? You see that? Osim agudot la'atzmam. They are making their own groups. And that is the earliest source. This leads a bunch of historians to say that the opposition to Hasidim is social. Social opposition. Meaning to say, we have an established community, an established rabbi. By the way, this is all quoted by Etkes, right? Etkes in his book, Yachid B'doro, pages like 30-something to 40-something. I don't remember exactly. I can tell you exactly. I took a few pages. But Etkes basically quotes that some say, Dubnov says and others, that there's social opposition. Hasidim are coming and they are trying to uproot the established community. We have a Rav in town. And the Rav has his shul. And now you're establishing your own base medrash? That's bad. You're undermining communal structure? Off with your head, cherem. Now, if it's social opposition, so the leaders of the opposition to Hasidus would have been whom? What?
The Rabbanim
maybe, but you have to remember also that a community is defined as taxes. If you break off from the community, you're not going to pay taxes the same way we pay taxes, no? That hurts us in the pocket. There are Zion Tuvei Ha'ir. There are communal leaders. Now, remember, there was something called the Var Arba Aratzos. There is a group of four lands, and the Vad Medina Slita, which was separate and incorporated, whatever it is, and the Vad Abaratos. That was disbanded in the year 1564. That means that until 1564, right, there is a centralized communal authority. 17, I'm sorry. Time number four. 1764, there's a centralized communal authority, right, that is in charge of everything. But once that centralized communal authority is gone, and now you have people, so the shuls, the rabbis thought, okay, Vad Abratzos is gone, now we should have the power. But now people are selling their own thing, cherem. That is the social explanation of this dispute. Now, if that's, yeah, Cece? Okay, so certainly Gershon Sholem, who views everything as being an extension of Shabtai Tzvi or the Frankists, right? So Gershon Sholem takes it that way. I would say that's like explanation 1A. That's kind of merging a social explanation together with some genuine fear of serious kfira. But one could argue that it's primarily a social opposition. Right? It's certainly possible to argue that way.
I think that we're going to see that from our perspective today, we always look a bit petty and power hungry. But when you remember how feelings were structured then, that kind of
now remember, this is though a long time after Shabtai Tzvi. Right? It's around 80 years after Shabtai Tzvi's apostasy. So maybe it could be that that's what motivated them, and certainly we'll make a suggestion along those lines in a minute. Right now we're just giving suggestion number one, which we'll call social. Suggestion number two is that what motivated the opposition against the Hasidim was a deep-seated religious, theological problem with them. Now, this emerges from the Gaon's own writings. The Gaon, there are basically three stages in the opposition to Hasidim. There's 1772, against Wikipedia said 1777, there's 1781, then there's 1797, a few months before the Gra dies. In 1797, a few months before the Gra dies, the Gra really lashes into the Hasidim. He writes letters where he calls them Mordim and Poshim and Kofrim, and how they are misunderstanding everything. There are serious theological problems that he has. Theological problems that are explained by the Alter Rebbe of Chabad in his letters. We'll get back to this in a few minutes. About the nature of Tzimtzum, of God limiting himself to create the world. There are big issues that they had in terms of priorities, whether Torah is more of a priority or Tefillah is more of a priority. There are big issues in terms of the role of a tzaddik and whether individuals can connect to God directly. These are big theological issues. And one could say that the opposition to Hasidim is on those grounds. It could be social, or it could be what I would call religious theological. Or it could be both. Right? And remember, the letters that were signed in 1772. Who signed the letters? The Zion Tuvei Ha'ir, Rabbi Shmuel Avigdor, who is the rabbi of Vilna, and the Gaon. That means both the communal leaders and the rabbinic leaders are signing. And one could easily argue that they have different, right, different goals in mind. Now, I give you some of the signatures in letter one. So far, so good. That's what happened in 1772. Now, Etkis asks the Kasha, why is it that this begins in 1772? If the Besht dies around 1750, what happened for those 20 years? Now, we do have some episodes of Hasidim trying to become rabbis in various communities, and there were fights. What happened between 1750 and 1772? So there are a few answers. One answer is that until 1772, the Hasidim didn't really gain strength. But the Maggid of Mizrich, who's the main Talmud of the Goyin, the Maggid of Mizrich is of the Besht. Oh gosh. Right? It's in the 1500s also. Right? So the Maggid of Mizrich, who's the main Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, the Maggid suddenly is capturing towns. And Hasidim are getting successful. And they're getting close to Vilna. So then they get scared. Okay, what? They're taking over. We are scared. We have to fight against them. Right? That is a possibility as to what happened in 1772. That is the standard approach among historians. Remember, 1772 is not so long after 1764, after Vadar Baratzos disintegrated. It could all be done. However, Etkis has the following theory. Take it or leave it. There is a letter from Reb Schneier Zalman of Liadi. Now, there are two letters that the Alter Rebbe wrote. One is a letter the Alter Rebbe wrote to his Hasidim in Vilna. Another is a letter the Alter Rebbe wrote to another Rebbe. One he wrote in the year 1797. The other one he wrote in the year 1805. These are the two letters of the Alter Rebbe about the Machlokes. And the Alter Rebbe is a prominent and important person in this Machlokes with the Hasidim. Let's skip a source, or two sources. Igeres of Reb Schneier Zalman to his Hasidim in Vilna. It's quoted in Volensky, page 198. Again, and I typed it out because I couldn't find this online, and there are also some typos. Bidvar ha-vikuach im shekenegdo. With this, with respect to the Machlokes with the opposing side. That's where he begins. Ilu haya be'efshari lavo lidei gemar nachon imahem, bevadei ein lecha mitzvah gedola mizu. If we could come to a proper resolution, there'd be no greater mitzvah. Now this is a beautiful thing. The Alter Rebbe is beginning his letter with saying some nice consolatory things. If we could have peace, that would be amazing. La'asos shalom b'Yisrael. That's the greatest thing ever. Ach ma lanu la'asos v'lo asinu. What can we do that we haven't done? We tried really hard and we were unsuccessful. Our hands are clean. Hine. Meireshis kazos hodanu. From meireshis kazos. Translate those words. From the beginning of this. That means the Alter Rebbe writing in 1797 is saying way back in the beginning. Right? Hodanu, we heard about this. In other words, we heard about the Goyin's opposition. V'holachnu el ha-goyin ha-chosid Nero Yair. By the way, the Alter Rebbe speaks about the Gra in nice terms. The Goyin ha-chosid. We went to his house. Lehisvakeach imo. To argue with him. Lohasi etluna seinu me'aleinu. To remove the complaints from us. Biyos sham. Im ha-chosid ha-manoach. Reb Menachem Mendel of Haristiner. That's called Reb Menachem Mendel Vitebsk. That's his name. So the Alter Rebbe says, when I was in Vilna with Reb Mendel of Haristiner, and we went to try to go to the Goyin to discuss with him. And what happened? These are the key lines in Judaism. Okay? V'sagar hadeles ba'adenu pa'amayim. He closed the door on us twice. Meaning, he didn't let us in. The Alter Rebbe is saying, I tried, together with Mendel Haristiner, to connect with the Goyin. He didn't let us in. V'kashen nechlu lehavtzir bo ma'od. But when the people in town began to plead with the Gra very much. Chalafa halachlo v'nasa min ha'ir. The Gra ran away. He left town. And the story is, and some of the letters, by the way, are written from the Gra is in other communities. And some of the signatures here are in these attacks across in other towns. The Gra ran away because he didn't want to meet with the Alter Rebbe and Reb Mendel of Vitebsk. That's the story. Now, it's worth noting, by the way, that the Rav on Yud Tes Kislev one year spoke in Chabad. It's published in Rav Shechter's Divrei HaRav, page 82, if you're interested. And the Rav told the story very differently than any other story that I've heard. The Rav, first of all, writes that the Alter Rebbe went together with Reb Levi Yitzchak Berditchev to the Goyin. Now, from the original source, it's clear it's not Reb Levi Yitzchak. Also, it couldn't have been Reb Levi Yitzchak, because, we'll talk about it in a few minutes, in 1781, the Goyin wrote a letter to Pinsk to remove the rabbi of Pinsk, who was a chassid, whose name was Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev. Right? The Goyin had him removed from his position in 1781. It's highly unlikely that Reb Levi Yitzchak would have been the one who would come and try to appeal to the Gra, although, no, anything is possible. Now, this episode with the Gra, with the Alter Rebbe and Reb Mendel of Vitebsk, when did it happen? So historians date it to 1772. That's interesting already. And they also quote another letter of the Alter Rebbe, that the Alter Rebbe had a public dispute with Hasidim in the town of Shklov in 1772. That had a public dispute with Misnagdim in the town of Shklov in 1772. That means as follows. Says Emmanuel Etkes, what that means is that in 1772, the Alter Rebbe hears that the Hasidim are beginning to be attacked. And he decides, I'm going to try to make peace. I'm going to try to go to the Goyin. The Goyin doesn't want to see him. He has a public dispute. Part of the letters of the Alter Rebbe is the Goyin didn't want to see me because the Goyin felt that I'm a kofar because I misunderstood passages in Zohar. That's what it takes to be a kofar, apparently. Okay? And the Goyin paskind the din of Moridin velomailin, which is that if you see an apikoris, you push him down to the bottom of a pit and you don't pull him up. Right? That is already what's going on here. So in 1772, the things are heating up. The community is writing a letter after, Etkes suggests, it's after the Alter Rebbe tries to meet with the Goyin. That's when the letter comes out. And the letter basically is saying, the Cherem is saying, you know what? The Goyin feels that they are Kaifrim. The townspeople may not have felt as much. Kfira wasn't the issue that spoke to them, but that's the issue that spoke to the Goyin. The Goyin realized that, you know what, the people want me to meet with them, but if you're a kofar, I don't have to meet with you. I'm going to meet with people, the Goyin said, I'm going to meet with people who I could teach Torah to. But if someone's a kofar, they are mechutz l'mach, I'm not going to meet with them. Now the townspeople are saying, no, Goyin, we want you to meet with them. The Goyin says, you know what, I'm not supported by my own community. Yes, they're opposed to Hasidim, but not to the same extent I am. The Goyin runs away. Now, what happens is the Goyin leads a battle against the Hasidim on ideological grounds because he feels that they are kofrim based on misunderstanding Zohars, etc. That's all what's written. That is the point we want to make. Let's go on. 1772 is stage one of the Machlokas. 1781 is stage two of the Machlokas. Two things happen in 1781. Yeah. So the Rav has a different version of the story. The Rav's version of the story is that it's not, that's the Alter Rebbe and Reb Mendel and Reb Levi Yitzchak, not Reb Mendel of Vitebsk. That's one difference. And the question as to why the Goyin did not want to meet with the Alter Rebbe is a real question. One suggestion is that they didn't want to meet because the Goyin said, you know what? You're not going to accept my Torah. If you're not going to accept my Torah, I'll push you away. Forget it. I want to have nothing to do with you. Forget it. You're not going to accept my Torah. I'm not going to meet with you. That's one version. The Rav, when he spoke to Chabad Hasidim and Yotes Kislev, whatever that year, had a very different version. The Rav said that the reason why the Gaon didn't want to meet with the Alter Rebbe is because the Gaon knew that if he'd meet with the Alter Rebbe, he would himself become a Chassid. And he wouldn't be able to oppose the Hasidim anymore. I have no idea where the Rav got this from and how he could say it with a straight face.
The flattery is awesome.
I don't know, but that's the story. That's the story, yeah.
Do you know what points in Zohar were the contention?
We don't know. We don't know. We, again, everything is based on letters that of the Alter Rebbe. Again, there's a few letters that are written, that are printed here. In this book, I tried to give some excerpts. We just don't know. Now, let's just go on very quickly. 1772 is stage one of the controversy. 1781 is stage two. In 1781, two things happen. Thing one that happens is there's this fight in Pinsk about the rabbi. And this rabbi, named Reb Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, is removed as being the rabbi because he was too Hasidic. That's one issue. Next issue. 1781 is an important year. Let's look in another very important source, Wikipedia. Rabbi Jacob Joseph of Polonia, also known as Reb Yaakov Yosef HaKohen of Polonia, was one of the first and most dedicated disciples of the Baal Shem Tov. His book, Toldos Yaakov Yosef, is published in 1780. Why is Toldos Yaakov Yosef important? It's the first Hasidic work ever published. Okay, now we got a problem. Until now, Hasidim have been a local issue. In one base measure, I have a Chassid. No? Once I'm publishing books, so then Hasidus could spread. Okay, now they get really scared. Hasidus is spreading. What are we going to do? Back to the Cherims. Interesting things to note. In the Cherims of 1781, they repeat the Cherims of 1772, but there is one or two lines that are added. First of all, I give you the thing. Ha'ish asher hukam b'kilaschem l'moro l'goyin u'machzik de'poalei oven, about this Hasidic rabbi, get rid of him. That's paragraph one. U'bedvar asher badu milibam shechazer bo hagon ha'amiti ha'choser Reb Eliyahu. This that you're saying that the Goyim changed his mind. You see, how the Hasidim respond to the Goyim? Hasidim were not going to say, or some Hasidim said, that the Goyim, who's he? Forget about him. But that was the kiss of death. That means that you are not accepting the Goyim. People are going to throw you out. You have no traction with that. So there are two approaches. The Alter Rebbe took the approach that, yeah, sure, the Goyim opposed Hasidim, but that's because the Goyim was such a tzaddik, such a purist, he's in a different place. So for him, he opposes Hasidim. But for normal Jews, Hasidus is great. That's what the Alter Rebbe said. Other Hasidim took the approach, yes, the Goyim opposed Hasidim in 1772, but you know what? The Goyim made a mistake. Comes along the letter of 1781, and it says, this that you're saying, that the Goyim changed his mind? Sheker anu banu. It's a lie. A grubber ligner. Right? A fat lie. They made it up. They made everything up. They made up their own minhagim. They're making this up also. It's all made up. 1797. Right? The Goyim writes letters before he dies, attacking Hasidim again. Now, the attacks get kind of vicious. They attack the Hasidim, saying some really, really negative things. The same things that they say about Shabtai Tzvi next. They're saying about Hasidim in terms of how they used tefillah and the way of trying to arouse themselves sexually, and that's very improper. They're very negative things are going back and forth. And the Charamim are flying. And after the Goyim dies, the Charamim really, really, a few months after, spread tremendously. But then it all stops. Then it all stops. And by 1803, when the Valojna Yeshiva is opened, you don't have Charamim anymore. Now, why is that true? Again, so we mentioned before Dov Eliyahu's theory, that Mepchen Valojan would have continued it, but it was against the law to make Charamim. Alternatively, the standard approach is that Reb Chaim Volozhin had a different approach to Hasidim than the Gaon. Reb Chaim Volozhin was very opposed theologically to Hasidim. Nefesh HaChaim, I know Dr. Lamb maintains that's very similar to Tanya, and in some ways it is similar, but if you read, there's a section called the Prakim, between Shar Gimel and Shar Dalet of Nefesh HaChaim. There's a section over there of 8 chapters where each one is an attack on Hasidim. They daven after Zman Kriya Shema and they misunderstand the idea of Dveikus Bashem, like everything. He doesn't mention them by name. He calls them nice things. He says these are people trying to do Hashem's will, etc. He says nice things about them, but it's attack, 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 attack. The Chaim Volozhiner was not a fan of Hasidim, but he had a different approach to deal with them. His approach was, I'm going to teach Torah in my yeshiva. And I'm going to teach Torah, and you know what? We're not going to fight this fight. We're just going to teach Torah, end of discussion. That's Reb Chaim Volozhiner's approach. The Mesorah from Rav Soloveitchik is that in Europe, it was considered greater yichus to be from the family of Reb Chaim Volozhin than from the family of the Gra. And that's because the Gra fought the Hasidim, and Reb Chaim Volozhiner didn't. So therefore, the yichus of Reb Chaim Volozhiner was assumed to be a better yichus than the yichus of the Gra. Now, what are we supposed to make of this? Basically, we have a problem. We have clear evidence that the Gra is really, really opposed to Hasidim. And the Gra seems to have made a mistake. And hence, people bury the evidence, literally. Right? Until Dov Eliach's book came out, you could not find it. And even after the book came out, you can't find the book unless you want to spend $300 on Amazon, by the way. $300 for the 3 volumes. $100 a volume. Right? That's gelt.
It's the same business with the making of a gadol.
It's very similar to the making of a gadol, although the making of a gadol was reprinted by Gil students. But yeah, this has not been reprinted. So, what do we make of this? So I would say that this is the larger question. You know, Rav Schwab once wrote an essay that was attacked widely about what purpose have we in studying history. All we need to know is the good and nice things about our leaders. I think there is value in knowing some negative things. The Gaon made a mistake. The Gaon! You realize that's the Gra. The Tzaddik, the Chosid, the biggest Talmud Chacham I can imagine. Right? The Gaon made a mistake.
Tactical mistake
So I would say it's probably both. In other words, you can't ignore the fact that Hasidus in some ways infused Eastern European Jews with a spirituality and a vibrance that Misnagdus didn't have. Hasidus has been a very positive thing. The Gaon didn't notice that. Now, one could contend that Hasidus was only positive after the Gra's attacks. And if not for the Gra's attacks, Hasidus would have been this terrible negative movement that would have undermined all of Judaism. Maybe. Or one could try to draw lessons in terms of how to deal with heterodox movements when they come up in the year 2014, 2015. Do we fight against them with Charamim? Or do we say, you know what, our job is to teach Torah, and we're not going to impose Yisurim, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner approach instead of the Gra's approach? Or, you know, do we say also that maybe the Gra was fed wrong information about Hasidim? When you read the Gra's last letter about Hasidim, and the letter is basically saying the same stuff as the Shabtai Tzvi next, my guess is that the Gra was a tremendous tzaddik, and he sat in his room and he learned Torah all day. And he probably never walked into a Hasidic base medrash in his life. And he was fed information about the Hasidim. And the information that he fed was really, 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 really negative. And this, to me, is very similar to you read a Kol Kore, a Pashkevil, on the wall, and it's signed by Head Hancho. I don't have less respect for Rebbe Yoshev, because Rebbe Yoshev is a tremendous, was, he's not alive anymore, tremendous master. He learned Torah all day, and the people who were feeding him information, but right, I don't think Rebbe Kanievsky would know an iPhone if it bit him. Right? I don't think he knows an iPhone can't bite. I don't think he, but how come he's making these serum? Because people are telling him about how terrible these things are. And that means that when they make these charamim, we have to take it with a few grains of salt. And I think that is what was going on with the Gra. I think the Gra was fed wrong information, or information that may have been based on specific tiny groups of Hasidim who were doing terrible, terrible, terrible things. It was a really small group. And the Gruz blowing it up and making charamim, right? Instead, if you're, if your feet on the ground, you realize it's a very small group, etc. Maybe it's not worth the same type of charamim. That's just what I have to say about this. I think it's important that to realize that we can have accurate information about the Gra and not have that detract from the value that we hold to the Gra. Similar to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, I'll just close with this. Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a comment on the Gemara and Saitin. Gemara and Saitin writes about Yosef HaTzadik. The Gemara and Saitin says that Yosef HaTzadik went home and he wanted to have sex with Hashem Potiphar. That's what it is in his mind. So, for Rabbi Yaakov Emden, why is the Gemara doing this? Like, you don't see that anywhere in the story. Why is the Gemara doing that? So, Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that, you know what, this should enhance our notion of what a Yosef HaTzadik is, because he's a person who's struggling with the same type of struggles that other people struggle with. And sometimes if you realize a goyin, even the goyin, can make a mistake about this, in some ways that could enhance our appreciation of it. That's, I think, the way we could take it, but comment.
Yes, can you say that Hasidus was really a critique of the Snagin, because the Snagin was elitist, intellectual.
Yes, yeah, so certainly the Hasidim, Hasidim is a movement that's meant for the Hamon Am. It's to get, absolutely, 100%. But at the same time, you also have to deal with the notion of a tzaddik by Hasidim, which is their own type of, it's a different type of elite. And it's a type of elite that's in a different sort of way than the Litvish elite. If my tefillos can't go up to the Eibishter without a tzaddik assisting, besides the theological problems that causes, that means that there's a different elite out there who's necessary to help my prayers up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is really not just about...
Okay, my rev is in 1 minute.
No, yeah. But this business about feeding the big guys information, this is really has terrible consequences. Don't they have a responsibility to make sure that their underlings are feeding them the right information?
I think you're right. People do have responsibility. But you also have to realize the perspective if you're a Gra or you're a Rebbe Yashiv. The thing that you care about most in the world is a Taisus or a Rambam, is a text. You're really not interested. Again, there are certain Gedolei Yisrael who like people. Then there are other Gedolei Yisrael who like texts.
Then the ones who just like texts should pass off the Paskin.
No, not necessarily, because they could Paskin better. They know more text than they could Paskin better than anyone else.
But if they're getting fed wrong information.
Again, maybe they shouldn't be Paskin on these types of things. I would agree with that. But in terms of a Shaila about whether you make a Brain the Fushas or an Asher Yatzar, they know all the text a lot better than anyone else.
That's not what they're getting fed wrong information about. And the consequences of some of that stuff is really bad.
I'll agree with all that. Again, I thank you all for coming and listening. Have a good night.
Very good.